Today I have Lixi Borum with me, and I'm just really excited to have another human being on the podcast with me. I connected with Lixi initially because she always used to message me about my podcast, which I know she found really helpful. And I have been following her online as she shares her journey recovering from long COVID. And I just really love like the down-to-earth, authentic content that Lixi shares. And I think you posted something recently, Lixi, and it was just, you know, I think it was like a very ordinary post just about something that was going on in your life. And I really connected with it. And I just thought it'd be so nice just to have someone on the show to paint the picture of recovery, because sometimes we, like if you look online, there's often people who are trying to sell you something, like me, and they want to paint this like amazing picture of recovery. Look what's possible. And I think we do need that, but we also need the sort of in the trenches stuff and information, because it's such a lonely journey. And when people are really sharing the ins and outs of their experiences, I think it helps people feel less alone. So Lixi's here today really just to share, for us to have a very relaxed chat, like just a conversation about all the ins and outs of recovery. And yeah, I'm sure there will be things here for the listeners to connect to and things that will resonate and just, yeah, help you feel less alone on your journey. So very long intro, but welcome, Lixi. Thank you so much for making the time to be here today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited. It feels quite full circle because like you said, when I was first unwell, this podcast, I think you had just started it. So it was really good timing for me. And I was just listening to episode after episode, slowly unraveling what might be going on. And it was so, so helpful. So I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, yeah. No, it's wonderful to have you here. And yes, it does feel like a little completion of sorts, you know, to be on the show. And maybe just as a starting point to just give some background on your experience. I've already mentioned that you had long COVID, but I don't know, you know, obviously whatever you feel comfortable to share, if you want to just say a little bit about like when that happened, because I think it was quite early on in the sort of pandemic days, and just, you know, what sort of that experience was like, because I'm sure it was probably quite blindsiding in the beginning.
Yeah. So I think the reason I resonated with your podcast so much is because your experience of sort of health was so similar to my own, sort of through my 20s, really just going hard at everything, work, exercise, socializing, and cramming as much in as possible, and constantly being in a sort of cycle of burnout. And I was 29 when I got long COVID. I was a lawyer. I still am a lawyer. And I was, yeah, very active. I had COVID a few times, completely asymptomatic each time. And then a few months after my third infection, I just woke up one morning and felt like I had been hit by a ton of bricks. That fatigue, that brain fog, which everyone listening to this will probably know how that feels. And that was in September 2022. And yeah, I, as I had always done, tried to push through, kept working, kept exercising, tried to snap out a bit by exercising and working harder. I don't know why I thought that would work. And then eventually in November 2022, I was signed off work for 2 weeks, which says it all about what my mindset was. And I was then actually off work for 2 years. And those initial stages were, it's a bit of a blur, to be honest. I think a lot of people who have been in this place know what it's like, where every day is a real struggle against your body. And the fatigue was just so heavy. I was sleeping 16 hours a day sometimes, not eating, not drinking, because I couldn't get out of bed. And I had all kinds of symptoms. So a lot of my symptoms were dominated by gut-related symptoms. I was really lucky not to have neurological symptoms. I know that those can be incredibly debilitating. So yeah, gut, nausea, migraines, insomnia, depression, bit of anxiety. too many to really remember, and later develop lung and heart complications as well. And so those 2 years were really, it was just trying to get by every day and just trying to recover any small percentage of health. And then over the last year or so, I have felt a sort of weight lifting in terms of my health. And I've had a really beautiful expansion of energy so that I can exercise a bit more in obviously a very sustainable, gentle way. And I am working again. And really exciting is I am in the office 2 days a week now, just for 4 hours each time. But that feels like a monumental milestone because it didn't feel like I was ever going to be able to be in the office again. So yeah, that's where I am now.
And I've seen your posts about going back to the office, and it always amuses me because you seem like genuinely so excited that you can go to work. And I cannot, I'm such an introvert. I cannot think of like, the comprehend working in an office just sounds miserable to me. But I'm so pleased that you can have that.
It's so funny. One of my friends, I said, I'm exhausted at the moment because I'm going into the office. And she was outraged. She said, why are they making you go in? Don't they know you struggle with energy? And I said, no, it's a good thing. I love it. It's giving me a sense of purpose. It's giving me a bit of socializing. It's getting me out of my flat. I think living by myself as well, it's especially important to have that routine and outside contact. Otherwise, I'm just at home alone all day. And I think I spent a lot of my most unwell days in my flat alone. And I think it's quite nice to sort of break free of that and not go back to being really insular in my flat.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely something to be said for having somewhere to go. And I mean, even though I am very introverted, I go to the beach in the morning, and then I see, I call them my beach friends, like all the people who are also going to the beach in the morning. And then we have a little chat and then we like go to work. But yeah, I think you do need something, especially when you spend so much time alone.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about like when you first got unwell. You know, I appreciate because you were coming at it from such a different position that I was coming at it from when I got unwell, because I was already working in the health space. There was sort of this awareness of certain things. But when this happens to someone who's maybe not in that space and you're trying to like comprehend like what's happening, how do I get support, what is possible for me, what was all of that like to navigate?
It was really scary. We're so used to dealing with acute illness and the timescales of acute illness. You have, say, tonsillitis and you're unwell, you go to the doctor, they know how to treat it, and you can expect to be fully recovered within, say, 3 weeks. Going to the doctor and having bloods that are all normal, but feeling so deeply unwell and having all of these different symptoms, which of course at the time I didn't know were related. I was going to so many different doctors for so many different things. I mean, firstly, physically, it's just exhausting when you're already low on energy and you're being sent to all of these different specialists. It's exhausting and no one really has an answer. It's incredibly frustrating. And I think, again, that was why I fangirled you so much with your podcast, because it was the first time I'd actually kind of moved beyond relying on doctors to actually think, okay, well, what's really going on? What's the more complex picture? And I love biology and kind of biochemistry. I find that so interesting. And I love the explanations that you gave that gave me the information about what might be going on in my body, which is actually far more complex than just here's some iron supplements, hopefully this helps. So yeah, I think once I started to understand that it was probably more of a chronic fatigue burnout, that was helpful. And that actually meant that I got a referral to see a kind of long COVID chronic fatigue specialist. And that was when I had more detailed bloods. I was diagnosed with long COVID and I was given a bit more information about what it was that was happening to my body. And so I think that in itself was really helpful because it took away some of the pressure that I was putting on myself, where I thought I need to be better soon. Why am I not better yet? and kind of kept fighting the illness. And then once I realized, actually, this is something a bit longer, I'm going to have to take this a bit more seriously and allow myself a longer period of time to recover. That was very, not freeing, because I don't think anything about the condition is freeing, but it was mentally, I think that really helped having that shift.
Yeah, I'd say maybe just a bit more acceptance rather than freedom. Like, you could just accept, okay, this is going to take some time, which I know, like, I really struggled with as well, to really like come to like that acceptance piece. And it's a whole journey in itself.
It's being a type A person. Everything, and you are forced to do less and focus on being still.
Yeah.
Looking on.
And I think as well, just for me, I was like, this is another thing I can achieve at. like look how good, look how fast I can heal. Look how good I can be at healing. That's not a good way to approach it.
No.
Once you kind of reach this more like maybe acceptance, maybe surrender, like this is a long-winded process, I'm going to have to take it one step at a time. What were some of the things you found supportive? And obviously just here, I just want to say for listeners, like everybody finds different things supportive. So this is not a prescription, but it's just your experience.
A lot of what I found the most beneficial was actually not in the kind of supplements and whatnot that I tried. It was in quite literally the kind of support network that I built for myself. And I think it was around that time when I was finding acceptance that I realized I needed to be serious about implementing boundaries, about saying no, asking for help, and being really honest with family and friends about how I was feeling and asking for their help. And actually, incidentally, this is about the time that I set up my Instagram page. And that was to find a bit of community, because I felt so lonely. And I think it's really difficult when you feel like you're the only person in the world who's going through this. It's hard because you're so hard on yourself. You see everyone else around you going about their lives and you feel like you've done something wrong. And that, I think, being hard on yourself is not helpful. And so finding other people who were going through similar experiences, who were very similar to me and had lived their lives in a similar way, I think that was incredibly helpful. And finding a few really good friends who were going through the same experience, where we could back and forth on ideas, emotions, thoughts, was really helpful, just to have that sort of sense check of, I'm not alone in this and it's okay. That was really helpful.
Did you ever feel, this was always like in my journey, I was very actually cautious of overly connecting with other people who were unwell, because I also didn't want to get pulled down by maybe some people's belief systems and things like that. Did you generally find, because I know, I think you've changed your Instagram handle now, but it used to be Positively Fatigued. So you went in with a very sort of, there was that positivity coming through from the very beginning. But was there ever a sense of maybe that you could sort of end up like spiraling in sort of some sort of negativity?
Yeah. And I think it's such an interesting area, because ultimately everyone who has chronic fatigue, long COVID, ME, any kind of chronic illness is in the same boat, but there's so many nuances within this kind of sphere. There are so many people who are extremely severe, some people who are more mild, and then some people are kind of in the middle, which is maybe where I'd put myself. And then within that, you also have different personalities and the way that people approach the world, the way people see the world, different values, etc. And so I think it's definitely, there were times when there was a lot of negative noise. And that's not to say that the people whose kind of content I came across or whose comments or whatever I came across, is not to say that they were in the wrong. It's just for me, I didn't receive that kind of approach very well, and it set off my nervous system into a bit of a panic state. And I definitely found there was one Facebook group that I joined initially before I set up my Instagram, and I joined it and I read some of the posts and I just thought, oh my God, this cannot be good for me. I don't think I can do this. And that was when I decided to set up my Instagram, just to see if I could, you know, find anyone else or show people that, you know, I was another voice that you know, they could resonate with potentially. There have been times when I've been exposed to content and I have found it really hard. And actually now, as I start to get better, I am very aware of not holding on to an identity as someone who has long COVID, because I am still not well, but I do feel like I'm getting to a place where I'm getting a lot more of my health back. And it's just this hard balance between moving forward, but also not trying to completely dissociate from it, because ultimately I do still need to look after myself. It's
really,
I don't know if it really answers your question or makes any sense.
It doesn't matter. It's all good stuff, but I really just resonate with what you said. I think there's still this, there's something I think about a lot, is because before my illness, I was so disconnected from myself in so many ways. Some of those ways I'm only even now uncovering at this stage. And so there's like, I never really knew what I needed before. Not completely. I mean, obviously I was an adult kind of functioning in the world, but the degree of like how I understand my needs now is so different to what it was before. And does that make me unwell? Or does that make me more connected? And what's the difference between the two? And then how do you defend your needs without feeling like it's some kind of pathology? And so it's like, yeah, I don't have the answers, but that's something I think about a lot. And it's like, you know, how do we, you know, coming back to what you're saying about not identifying as someone with long COVID, but then still that awareness of your health needs taken care of. Can we believe that our health needs taking care of irrespective of an illness label? And I think that's what sometimes we struggle with. There has to be a reason for us to need these things. And if we're not sick, do we still need these things? Or are we still entitled to need these things, is what I want to say.
Yeah, it's so interesting you say that, because that's something that I'm struggling with at the moment. I think when I was unwell, it was so easy to put boundaries in place and say no, because physically didn't have the energy, and everyone understood why I was saying no and putting those boundaries in place. And as I have got more energy and I can do more things, I still have this need to justify why I'm saying no. And actually I have had tendencies to go through weeks where I've said yes to so many plans because I want to and I'm excitable and I just want to do everything, but actually have ended up having to cancel them because I'm still not well enough and because I want to protect my health. Yeah, it is interesting why I don't feel like I can just say no in the first place and not have to justify it, not have to give long COVID as a reason for saying no, but just say, no, I can't do that. I don't have time or energy, or no, I don't want to drink because, you know, I've had long COVID. I could just not want to drink because I'm an adult with free will, and that's completely okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. It's definitely something that I'm grappling with at the moment.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I always say, like, I believe that this healing journey is forever. I think that there's always like another layer. And that's probably more speaks to my personality, as I'm someone who always go deep with things. Whereas I think some people will feel well and they just sort of move on with life. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'm ever going to be one of those people, but there'll constantly be these things that you come up against if you're that way inclined to, you know, continue to have to work through. But I know I took you down a little bit of a rabbit hole. So was there anything else? You mentioned the importance of community and finding those spaces where you could really connect with people in a similar place to you in a positive way. Was there anything else that was supportive for you along the way?
I mean, part of the community I don't know if you know Susie Bolt, I did her long COVID class, her recovery classes, and I found that a really valuable source of community and structure as well. I think the times that I have seen the most progress in my health have been when I had the most rigid routine. And I think routine was incredibly important for me. I think knowing this is what I'm having for breakfast each day and I'm going to shower each morning. And even if I do nothing else the rest of the day, I've stuck to my morning routine and that makes me feel good. And having that kind of predictability was really helpful with the pacing and with sleep as well. I think pacing, sleep and nutrition were the three that I really found the easiest to work on in the early stages, because it is so overwhelming when there's so much going on. and just being able to focus on three things at a high level was really helpful. Like, it's easy to make myself go to bed at 9:30 every day and have that rigid bedtime. It's easy to make sure that I'm eating at a basic level, a balanced meal. And then pacing is not easy, but it's easier than some of the other more complicated things when you get down into the kind of roots of chronic fatigue.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people struggle with pacing. I think it's the thing that everybody battles with the most. Did you use Visible, or did you find a different way of pacing that works for you?
I did use Visible. I don't know if Visible was around when I first started pacing. So I did an online pacing course, and I found that really helpful. That was much more manual, sort of writing down all the activities you do in a week, rating them in terms of energy expenditure, and then planning my week using that as a kind of budget. And I guess that's basically that was kind of the foundation of my pacing knowledge. And then I started using Visible, and it was really helpful using Visible, but with the information that I already had, if that makes sense. That was helpful because I do get into a kind of hyper flow state sometimes when I'm doing something, and I know
what that's like.
Well, yeah, I think so many people do. Even if I'm just hoovering the house, like I would say I'll just do one room, and then suddenly I've done the whole house and I'm lying on the floor unable to put the hoover away because I'm so exhausted. And it's that sort of thing where my phone would buzz and say, you've been in your exertion zone for 5 minutes now, take a rest. And that was where it was really helpful in just forcing me to rein myself in.
Yeah, I guess I'm not saying that you necessarily disconnected from yourself, but sometimes people, when they lack that like interoceptive awareness as well to really feel when enough is enough, then yeah, it's helpful to have that external feedback. Although I do sometimes see with clients it goes the other way, and then they get really obsessive and stressed about their Visible scores and whatnot.
Yeah, so I actually stopped using Visible last year, partly because I was exercising again, so I was using my sports watch, and that was helping me a bit more. And I just thought, I can't have two different sources of data. I think I just need the one. And also, I wanted to make sure that as I go back into the world, like you said, I'm in my body and I can receive the signals live from my body and make sure that I'm not relying on a device too much as I start to do more things again. And, you know, I might use it again, I don't know. But for now, I think it's quite nice for me just to kind of stabilize and enjoy not focusing too much on pacing.
Yeah, I think that's, there's also something to be said for it's okay to pick things up and put them down again and then pick them up again. Sometimes, you know, I always say you do have to be consistent with things, but I think once you have been consistent with something for a while, to be like, I'm going to stop that and try it this way and see how that feels. And that kind of flexibility is a bit more like gentler, I think, on our nervous systems as well.
Yeah.
Has there been anything that like really wasn't helpful or just really didn't resonate with you? And maybe thinking of some of the things that are more sort of very popular in with this idea of like discernment and working out what works for you and what doesn't.
I've been quite selective about what I have done. I never did brain retraining. And I know that some people find it really helpful and some people find it really unhelpful. And I have been curious about it, but for me, for a long time, it felt like I didn't really have much with the things that I was capable of doing within my energy envelope. I didn't have fear or anxiety about those things. And so I just didn't feel like brain retraining was something that would suit me. Like you said, healing is kind of in phases. And I feel like I'm in a place now where I've seen a lot of improvement, and I'm lucky that I have. And I am looking how to get the next 10%, and whether brain retraining might be something, particularly around exercise. And I think you talked about this a little bit in one of your episodes on getting back into exercise, and whether brain retraining now would be helpful for me in that specific context of like how to really get going on exercise again. But yeah, that was one thing that just didn't resonate with me at all. And now I'm wondering whether maybe that is going to be something that's helpful for me.
Yeah, I think it sounds like you're very mindful of and intentional is maybe another word as well, about doing the right things at the right time as feels right for you, but then also not completely dismissing anything and being open to different things working at different times, which I think is really healthy, because we can't do everything at once. And sometimes things are more useful at different stages of the journey as well.
Yeah. And I think in the first five podcasts you did, you do talk about making sure that you don't just start all supplements at once, because you have no idea what your body actually needs. And also if you start taking or doing loads of things at the same time, you have no idea what's effective. And I've always tried to keep that in mind. So try one or two things at a time rather than doing it all at once and then having no idea what's actually helping.
It's been so long since I recorded those episodes. I'm like, did I say that? That was quite good of me.
Yes. So, honestly, yeah. Fantastic episode. So good.
I mean, I think I recorded those episodes starting like 2021, maybe 2022. I can't remember exactly now. It's been like, I've also learned so much like that it's in the past 5 years since then. I actually can't go back and listen to them because I'll probably think that they're terrible, but it sounds like it did say some useful things.
At the time, I found them incredibly helpful, so.
Yeah. And so like, you know, as we know, when you're in this process, there are these like ups and downs and, you know, you take a few steps forward, you take a few steps back, and that is the natural trajectory. There's no other way really. And I'm curious if there's anything like any particular setbacks that have maybe been difficult and how you approach them as you navigate them.
Every year, October
slide.
Seasonal slide. Yeah. Every year. I have struggled with that. I've had really good, energized summers and I feel like I've made great progress. And then September, October hit and it just feels like you unravel all of that progress you made. I find that that's frustrating. Separately, I also had a very unlucky incident with a tick bite in my own bed. I was actually housebound at the time and I got a tick bite in my own bed and ended up developing the Lyme rash and having to take a strong course of antibiotics for 3 weeks, which just completely floored me. And that was at a time when I felt like I'd been doing quite well. So that was really tough to take. And then last year went through a breakup and maybe we'll talk about that a bit later, but that again had a massive impact on my physical health. And I think the first time that you have, I mean, I've been kind of dealing with this for about 3.5 years. I think the first time you've made a little bit of progress and then you have one of these dips, it's so terrifying because you feel like
you're going backwards.
Am I just going to be in this cycle forever where I get a tiny bit of energy and then it all goes, and then a tiny bit of energy and then it all goes? And so I think that once I had a bit more experience that there is light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, and that certainly for me, I noticed that I really am very cyclical in how my energy and my progress goes. So I'll have a really good period where I get lots more energy, then I'll plateau for a while, maybe have a little dip, and then I'll have a massive increase again. That's how it's gone for me. And I think once I've had that experience and information, it's much easier to ride out the lows because you think this is just a period of time. I'm just going to go back to basics, back to nutrition, back to sleep, back to pacing, make sure I'm just reducing my life a little bit, giving my body this time to recover from this massive increase I've had in energy. And there will be light at the end of the tunnel. And sometimes those dips last for 2 weeks. Sometimes it's 3 or 4 months. And there's no way to know. But I think taking the pressure off and knowing that this has happened before, it will happen again. But I am slowly making progress and reminding myself of where I was a year ago or 2 years ago and how my bad days now are like my good days 3 years ago. And I think it's that comparison that really helps me.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually recorded an episode which hasn't been published yet, but it will publish before this episode goes out, which is talking about this when you've been stable for a while and then you go backwards, and then it can feel terrifying, you know, because you're worried that like that you're never going to get better, and all the old fears and memories come up. But there's definitely something about you know, I talk about the system sort of like expanding and contracting, and it does seem to be this as life is recalibrating to new loads. As we expand, there's almost like a contraction that happens, and then the body, I don't know what it does something, and then afterwards there's like this the next level is there. But so hard when you're really in it to like, you know, keep trusting the process that you will come out the other side.
Yeah, and I really enjoy, I listened to an audiobook by Catherine May. I think it's Catherine May, Wintering.
Yes, I've read her book, yes.
Yeah, and I loved it. I listened to it a few years ago when I was fully in the sort of autumn winter slide. And it just made me feel, it's like a very sweet book, not much, you know, it's not loads of knowledge, there's not lots going on. But I think it's just the general message that the world slows down during winter. Nature slows down during winter. Trees lose their leaves, animals hibernate, things slow down, and it's okay that we do too. And that's actually one of the most natural things that can happen. Mm-hmm. And so during those winter months now, I sort of just accept it. I know that I need to plan less. I know I need to sleep more, rest more, and just wait for the sun to come out in spring again. And I think that a very liberating thought to have, and like something to hold on to during the dark winter months.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it's that like allowing the natural cycles to take place, you know, inside the body and outside the body as well.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the breakup. I hope it's okay for us to talk about this, because I know I saw when you shared it on your Instagram, and I'm a bit of a comment stalker. So I read like all the comments, and you know, I think just so many people seem to obviously just resonate with like, you know, that kind of heartbreak, and then how much harder it is to navigate when you're not fully well because of the social isolation and the constraints, you know, involved. And I was wondering if you feel comfortable maybe just to share a little bit about navigating that and things that you found helped you cope.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think a breakup is exhausting for anyone. I think the physical effects of emotions on the body, it's like an emotional bomb goes off in your body. And where you have routine and safety, you suddenly don't. And that is exhausting. You know, the tears and the not eating, the not sleeping, the just sort of moving through the world like a zombie, that's something that most people experience, whether or not they have a chronic illness. It's just obviously that hits us much
more heightened. Yeah.
And so that's sort of one side of it. And then the other side of it was I had to move house. I had to move in with my parents. And then 2 months later, I had to move again back into my flat. I was desperately trying to do more to get myself out of the house to fill the void. So I was seeing more people again, like new people I hadn't seen in a while, filling up my diary. And that in itself was exhausting. So all of my routines, the pacing, sleep, the nutrition, all of that went out of the window. So it was a period where there was just this enormous physical toll on my body. And I am quite good at processing emotions. I journal, I talk to friends, I cry, I let myself feel all the emotions. But once I can rationalize something in my head, I'm kind of okay. And so emotionally, I overcame that sort of hurdle quite quickly. But the physical effect that I had lasted a good 3 or 4 months. And I was really struggling in sort of October, November, December, especially December, where Christmas is really busy. It's a very sort of couple-y, happy time of the year. So yeah, I mean, it was a huge struggle, and I had a bit of a existential crisis setting up a dating profile because...
I need to ask you about dating next.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, we can come on to that. But yeah, I think one of the things that I found was, and this is another thing, it's like this before and after me, it's this sense of identity. And my ex, he knew me before I was unwell. He knew me when I was unwell. He saw the depth of everything I went through. And whilst family and friends saw that, they weren't living with me. And I lived with him for a few years while I was unwell. And he saw that everyday struggle, the emotional ups and downs, physical ups and downs. And I was really fixated initially on the fact that I didn't have that person anymore who knew me before and during and had seen everything I'd been through. And I think that was a thought that I really struggled with. And I'm fine with it now. But at the time I found that very difficult, I think, because I felt like maybe it was almost like, was all of this real if someone wasn't there to witness it? Like, he was a person that was there to witness it. And if I now, I don't have that person I can go to and say, oh, remember last week when I was feeling down about this or this happened to my energy, that person who really knows everything, I didn't have that anymore. And it almost felt like, well, was all this just not real? And then the kind of self-doubt over, would this have happened had I been healthy? Would the relationship have ended sooner? Would it have not ended at all? It just raises a lot of questions, I think. And I did a lot of soul searching and introspection and therapy to kind of help me get through it and remind myself that I'm okay.
Yeah, gosh. And how did you find it just in terms of adjusting to being on your own? I know you moved in with your parents for a bit, so I guess you did have that sort of like cocoon of parental support while you were maybe navigating some of the bigger emotions. But then moving into your own flat again and then just being on your own, I guess adjusting to having to do everything for yourself, you know, that could also be a really big adjustment.
Yeah, that was tough. I mean, my parents, especially my mom, she's, I don't know how she does it. She is a superwoman and she is so generous with her time. If I need anything, she would be over here in a heartbeat. But yeah, the initial kind of month, I'd say living alone, it was just constant trips to the shops, like to buy food, making food, washing up, doing the laundry, hoovering, tidying. And I hadn't quite found a routine and a rhythm. And I think once I had found that, everything became a bit easier. And I think reminding myself that there's no shoulds. I don't have to hoover, you know, twice a week. I don't have to wash up my meal immediately after cooking it. I can leave it in the kitchen if I don't have the energy to. And just reminding myself that the only person in this flat is me and no one else is going to see if I leave my dishes for a day or two. And whilst I hate that because I'm a tidy person, it doesn't matter. And my energy is what matters. And I think finding that routine and a bit more of a flow has really helped because, like, yeah, the physical effect of all of these things. And I've been in this very cozy sort of cocoon where my partner had done a lot of the things around the house and there was very little for me to worry about. And then suddenly having to do everything alone again, it's a massive transition. And I think it just takes time to adjust. And I think it's a massive transition for anyone anyway, let alone someone with chronic illness. So I sort of remind myself of that this is not a unique thing that I've experienced and other people have had it too, just maybe to a lesser extent if they're not unwell.
Yeah, absolutely. And so moving on to dating. So this is something we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about breakups and dating on the podcast. So I'm just curious, and obviously, just share what you want to share. I know you will, but you know how you've kind of navigated that. Like, I guess this, and I don't want to name your experience, but I might imagine that this is quite, it's easy to sort of adopt what's happened to you as part of your identity. And then you're going into meeting new people. And how do you, because you talked about having that, losing that witness that you had, and now you're meeting your people, and how big a part of this experience do you share? And yeah, talk more about that.
honestly, I'd never done online dating. So this whole thing was just new to me anyway. But I set up a profile and had a full-on existential crisis because, I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, what dating profiles look like, but you share pictures of yourself and you share a few prompts. So like things you like to do on your weekends, what you're looking for. Some people approach it in a funny way. I wanted to approach it in a slightly more sincere way because I'm looking for someone serious. Yeah. And I spiraled because I thought, well, the old me loved cycling and running and doing loads of active things. And that's what I find attractive. Like that's an attractive quality. That's sort of, even if I can't do all of those things anymore, that's a large part of my personality, that kind of get up and go attitude. And that's something that I find attractive. So do I want someone who's like that? But then my energy can't keep up with that. And is it false advertising if I portray myself as someone active when actually I can't be really active at the moment? And so I sort of was in this place where I just had no idea how to portray myself, whether to go, you know, slightly more on the like, I like to stay at home and read and I want someone I can chill on the sofa with. But then I didn't want someone who wasn't active. And so I just sort of started spiraling. I didn't want to portray myself as someone that I'm not. And then, yeah, it took me a while. And then actually I realized if people can take me or leave me. Like, you know, if they start talking to me and they find out that I actually can't do all these things, that's fine. They can move along and I don't need to be worried about the judgment of someone I've never met. And if they judge me for it, then they're not someone I want to be with anyway. So exactly. I think switching it around and thinking, actually, no, I'm not just, you know, advertising myself. I'm also looking for someone and I want to know that someone can handle the fact that I've been through this thing and it's ongoing. And so, yeah, I had some really positive experiences. I have spoken to some friends who had some negative experiences with sharing with dates about their chronic illness, but I was really lucky and I brought it up either early on the first date or before first dates, just to say, like, I've had long COVID, I've been unwell for a few years. And the responses were always really genuine and kind and just like very supportive. And I think that restored my confidence a bit because I thought, actually, people don't necessarily care. What they care about is the person rather than what you're capable,
how far you can cycle on a Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. that was me bringing the old, my old assumptions. I used to focus so much on achievement and that sort of thing. And I don't even care about that anymore. So I don't know why I was getting so worried about it, but I think I almost needed it as a reset as to like who I am now, what I'm looking for. And it was a bit turbulent at the time, but I feel like now I'm really comfortable and I've looked into like, what are my values and what do I want to prioritize and who do I want to prioritize? And I'm seeing someone now. And
so exciting.
Yeah, he's so lovely, so caring. And yeah, I'm just incredibly happy. So,
that's like, so wonderful to hear.
Yeah, it's nice. And I do think some of the comments under the post I shared about my breakup were really lovely and encouraging. People saying that they've been through a similar thing and then found someone not long after who kind of, you know, changed their life. So I'm hoping, that I'm onto a winner, but we'll see.
Yeah, I just think, you know, there will be people listening to this podcast who maybe needed to hear that as well. And so, yeah, that's why I wanted you to I didn't obviously know you've been dating and seeing someone, but I think it's just really helpful to have these conversations.
Yeah, and I think it's lovely because he has get up and go and he is active, but he always says to me, I'm not with you because like for what you can or can't do, I'm with you because of who you are and the way you see the world. And I think that's such an important thing for us to remember is it's not about achievements or, you know, it's good to have aligned hobbies, but ultimately it's about who you are as a person and your illness doesn't affect that.
Yeah. And I think in many ways, I mean, my experiences, like my illness, like really deepened the richness of my inner world. And I feel like, I've got so much more to offer the world, you know, whether that's friendships or partnerships or whatever, as a consequence of the illness. It's a cliche. People say it's the best thing that ever happened to me. I mean, I would prefer if it hadn't happened, but in so many ways, it does really shape you and enrich you as an individual. And I think that's what people will find attractive. Now myself, I find people more attractive who've been through hard things, because you really just do appreciate, how that shapes you as an individual.
Yeah, 100%. And I think hard times are character building, and you really do learn who you are at a much deeper level. I feel exactly the same. So yes, it's a silver lining. I think it's important to find the silver linings, because otherwise it does just feel like a dark time. But I feel exactly the same.
Wow. I think, and so this kind of links back to the conversation around dating, because it is, when you were setting up your dating profile, there was these questions about who am I and what matters. So it'd be really wonderful, maybe just to touch on like some of the identity shifts that have maybe happened for you, you know, through the process, and if there's sort of any challenges ongoing around there.
Oh my gosh, daily challenges. Daily challenges. So before I was unwell, I was super focused on what I had achieved, what I could achieve. It was all about, you know, how much I could do, saying yes to things. And I was moving through the world doing all of these activities and hobbies that in theory I loved and enjoyed, but I was doing way too much that I wasn't really able to enjoy any of them. And that's not to say I didn't have enjoyment or happiness, because I did, but I just wasn't mindful in the way that I did the things I loved. And there was no balance at all. Like rest was like, you know, what's that? It didn't factor. And I've moved on to a place where I just don't focus on achievement in the same way. I don't focus on the things I can do or should do or am capable of doing. And I just don't find that kind of approach impressive anymore. I'm so invested in living a balanced life and focusing on what makes me happy and what aligns with who I am, rather than just picking up something new and running with it, just taking a moment to work out if it actually aligns with me, if it brings me a lot of joy and happiness. And then if it does, making sure that I'm balancing it with rest. And I think that's a much, much healthier approach for anyone, but definitely for me. I have a tendency to, I have quite an obsessive personality. So I have a tendency to get really hooked on something and then go all in. And that's great if it's one thing, but if you're doing it with five different hobbies, there's just no time for rest and enjoyment and wellness.
And so how do you rest?
How do I rest? I rest in lots of different ways. I have, on the one hand, lots of kind of restful practices. So yoga nidra, I love yin yoga. I do 2-3 times a week. And for people who don't know what that is, it's basically just stretching deeply on a mat in a warm, dark room. Meditations, breath work. And then I also have slightly more active rest where I might be reading, or I have comfort TV, which I love.
It's that term. No one's ever used that term before. Comfort TV. That's amazing for me.
So it's the things that I've watched before, or a TV show where it's not going to stimulate me. Nothing scary is happening. Nothing intense, nothing dramatic. It's just, I always think of it as TV that you don't really have to watch. Like you could be pottering around at the same time and you're not going to miss anything. So like for me, it's Friends, Gilmore Girls. I've been watching this TV series called Younger, which I love. And it's just shows like that where it's very gentle, it's calming, it's mostly positive, and I can just sit on the sofa with a cup of tea and enjoy that for 40 minutes. So yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I tend to do. And now I'm lucky enough that I can do even more active. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily rest, but sometimes it's rest for my brain. Like when I'm sewing, for example, I find that incredibly therapeutic. I'm not worrying about things. I'm sitting down. I'm just stitch after stitch. It's very engaging and it just switches my brain off. And I do find that sometimes important. So yeah, I think that's most of the ways that I rest.
Yeah, I think those are some really good ideas.
I'm also a very good napper, so I nap as well. Like that's super
easy. I do love a nap.
Yeah,
I'm power nap.
Yeah, power nap. Love a power nap. So yeah, that's kind of what I do now.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting what you say about, because there are different types of rest. And this year I created like a GPT, a custom GPT and chat GPT to like help me manage myself with my work, which has been really interesting. And one of the things that's been really helpful is like the GPT was able to identify, depending on what type of client I just work with, what type of rest I needed. So sometimes they'd be like, you need to actually stay busy, but just go like wash the dishes or just do something because you have to give some of the energy in your system time to settle. But then in other cases, like actually you need to contain your energy, you need to sit and like bolster yourself with cushions and like come back into your boundaries. So it's been really interesting just to explore how different types of rest serve us depending in the different situations.
Yeah. And I think if you just do a blanket term like, oh, I need to rest now, or I need to allocate 2 hours to rest on Tuesday or something, I think sometimes that can feel daunting. Whereas if you say, okay, well, I'll do 40 minutes of deep rest and then the rest of the time I'll just do a slightly more active rest. And when I watch TV, it's not sitting on my phone scrolling whilst I've got the screen on and I've got my laptop on.
You know, that's just overstimulation.
That's overstimulation. Yeah, I don't want to be double screening. So yeah, it's just, it's yeah, interesting. Maybe I'll use ChatGPT for my own. It sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, it gets it wrong sometimes as well. Like I have a horrific story about going to a passport renewal appointment with the wrong paperwork thanks to ChatGPT.
Oh, no. Which
we won't go into. That's another podcast for another day. But be careful. Yeah, just be careful what you learn from the robots. Yeah, listen to your internal intuition as well. So I think, I mean, we've covered a huge amount here. It'd be really just great to like understand like what day-to-day life looks like now and like the ongoing challenges that you still have and how you're navigating those.
Yeah, I feel like my life has blossomed a lot and I feel incredibly lucky and I feel a lot of peace because I'm at a place where if my health never improved from where I am now, I would be okay with it. I still feel like there are things that I would love to be able to do that I can't do. But my life is rich enough now in things that it takes the pressure off. It's taking the pressure off my healing because I feel like if this is as good as it gets, I'm so happy with that. So that's one thing. Day-to-day life is, I would say, much more normal now. In that I will probably be awake between 8 a.m. to sort of 9:30 p.m. And I some days have a nap or, you know, I'll maybe meditate and fall into a nap or whatever, but I can be awake for all of those hours on a more regular basis without needing to have like a timeout, which was unheard of a few years ago. And I have a very rigid routine. So I do yoga 3 days a week. I go to work my 2 days a week. I work 3 days a week in total. And then I have sort of Monday and Friday are my off days. And I can kind of cook dinner every night, which is incredible. And I think super important for my nutrition as well. And I feel really lucky that I'm well enough to do that now. At the moment, I think I've shared this online. As I've increased my work hours recently and started going to the office again, I have had to rein in the kind of exercise I was doing and the amount of socializing I was doing just to allow for this initial expansion in
an adjustment.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'll see a friend once or twice a week. And then the person I'm seeing, I'll see him quite a few times a week. I find him so calming. So I feel like that's that's restful enough.
Supportive.
Yeah. Supportive rest. I think there's not really much more to it than that. It's just doing a few things well at the moment. And I think that's bringing me a lot of happiness.
And is there anything that's hard, that you do find hard on an ongoing basis? I mean, often it is around boundaries, saying no, pacing, you know, those are the normal things, but anything specific for you?
Yeah, I think the boundaries is a big one. I think I mentioned that earlier. And it is just a constant reining myself in. That's always hard. And I think when you start, so going back to the office, I think in your head, you're like, oh, well, that's just 4 hours in the office. That's the time element. But actually it's not. It's the making sure your clothes are washed, making sure they're ironed, making sure I've washed my hair. It's like washing my hair three times a week, suddenly having washed it once a week for years, showering every day. It's like all these little things. And it's that remembering that adding in one small thing is actually adding in a lot of little things. So yeah, there's that. And then I shared a post yesterday, actually, I've been struggling a lot with, this is very specific, but with my skin, which suggests to me that something is not quite right internally. And so I've just been trying to work through that. And that's, I think, normal to have random little flares. And that's something healthy people have as well. But it's just something I'm super focused, you know, I'm very tuned into my body. So when there's a change, I think I notice it and want to do something about it. So little things like that will crop up from time to time. But otherwise, it is really just around the pacing and boundaries.
Yeah, I think it usually is towards the latter stages of the journey. And so you obviously have been on this really long journey, and there've been all these ups and downs and all these like lessons learned. And I'm just wondering if there's any lessons in particular that have really stood out to you, the things that have really like clicked and fallen into place.
I think one of the massive things, which is not so much a lesson as like a movement away from fighting fires with my health, moving towards wellness. And I never really sort of bought into the wellness thing. I was always very dismissive of it. And I think the moment something goes wrong and the doctors and medicine that we use do can't fix it, you realize how important the wellness is from a physical, mental, emotional, everything point of view. And I think for me, it's that, it's focusing on making your body well rather than just trying to eradicate the illness. And I think that's what's helpful. It's not, how do I get rid of long COVID? It's how do I rebuild everything in my life so that I can kind of fly after I've overcome long COVID? How do I like fly out into the world in the like healthiest, happiest state? And I feel like that's the journey that I now focus on. And so although I technically still have long COVID, I see it more as like a wellness journey now. And that's how I've tried to reframe it in my head. And that makes it feel more empowering rather than
something you have to do.
Yeah, rather than something on the back foot and I'm having to do. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And just as we're wrapping up, if you were to sort of give a message, maybe, you know, there's people listening to this podcast, they're all in different stages of their journey. So I mean, it's hard to necessarily give a message that resonates with each kind of stage. But if you could share something, just an important message from your own experience, what might that be?
Just take it one step at a time. It sounds so cliche, but when your body has been sort of broken to the extent that it is, that you're really suffering from burnout or chronic fatigue, it's a long journey to rebuild it. And that can feel incredibly daunting. It feels like you're standing at the bottom of a mountain looking up. But if you just focus on one step, one thing you can do today, one thing you can do this week, one thing you can do this month, it slowly builds up without really having to think too much about it. And I think that's the key thing. One step, one thing to try at a time. Don't get overwhelmed with how much there is out there, because it is overwhelming. You can shut out the noise and just focus on what feels like it aligns with you and what feels like it's going to work with you. Yeah. Focus on the next step, not the whole mountain.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there anything else that still feels on your heart to say today or anything you want to say as we wrap up?
I don't think so. I'd like to thank you for, honestly, all your podcasts. I think I was so, I've said this a few times already today, but I was so unwell and I was so lost and so confused. And you have the most calming voice and a most incredible way of explaining things in a really manageable way. And it was listening to your podcast honestly set me out on a little journey that has got me where I am today. And I'm so grateful for it. And I'm so grateful for you. So thank you.
I'm really touched by that. Thank you so much. It's, I mean, I say this all the time, like it is a lot of work to keep on making the podcast, but it's just when you hear how many people, you know, say that it's helped them in some way, it really does make it worthwhile for me. You know, it's a no frills podcast, but you know, there's not like ads or a jingle or whatever, but it's just, I think it's important to get the messages out in the world so that it can help people.
That is amazing. So well done.
Thank you so much for being here. I feel like I could have kept on asking you loads and loads of questions and just had like a really good natter about a million things. But out of respect for your time and energy, importantly, this feels like a good place for us to wrap up. But it was so wonderful. So thank you for being here. And do you want to share your Instagram handle so people can find you?
_LexiSophie, LexiSophie.
Okay. Yeah. So you can follow Lexi on Instagram. I love the things you share. I like to have a little stalk from time to time. And I'm sure other people will appreciate the journey and all the resources. So thank you so much.